Well, let me welcome back Kevin Lucco here to Systematically Wild. And Kevin, we're going to begin with the Iowa Wild this week. And before we get into the big news about the team, let's begin with the playoff series for this club. So we knew they were going to face Rockford. This was going to be the playoff matchup. It's probably well-recognized for a few weeks. But unfortunately, they just could not stop this Rockford team, wind up losing both of these contests in overtime, and the season comes to an end.
Yeah, it was frustrating and rather sudden, and it's too bad. You know, the team fought so hard just to get into the postseason and just to have it end in two games like that. It just seems rather brief, but, you know, it is what it is. And as we talked on the show, we knew Rockford was going to get reinforcements back from the Chicago Blackhawks, and that's exactly what happened. And it may have been the difference in the miniseries.
Yeah, clearly they were the team that just seemed to have the better of the play. Iowa scores first on Wednesday night on Rockford's ice. Mitchell Balmus with his first goal of the playoffs. David Gust comes back to tie the game. Just 18 seconds later, Brett's, is it Saney? Is that the way you say that?
Saney gives
Rockford the lead with a little over 2 minutes left in the first. Iowa battle back, tie the score on Stephen Fogarty's first goal of the playoffs, 4:14 to the second. Neither team is able to generate any offense. Iowa was giving Rockford everything they could handle in that third period, out shooting them 14-8, and had a number of great opportunities. But it was the goaltending of Soderblom for Rockford that kept them in that situation to get into overtime. Rocco Grimaldi scores the game winner, 3:59 into the extra session. And I, you know, at this point, I was thinking, okay, well, you're going home. You showed Rockford that you got stuff. You can battle back with them. You're not intimidated by this group in any way at all. So I didn't really think that was just a deflating overtime loss for the team at all, Kevin. But they came out on Friday night, and after taking the lead fairly early in that game, it looked like Rockford was going to dominate. They just played better for most of this game until in the third. It looked like, you know, Iowa had a brief stretch early in that third period to tie the game and eventually take the lead. But I thought Rockford just really came out with all the momentum for that game, and it wasn't surprising that they had the lead on Friday.
No doubt. If you look at the shots on goal in the last two periods, Rockford outshot Iowa 26-15. So that tells you the story right there. You know, I want to go back to the game on Wednesday night. And, you know, we talked all year about how your veterans have to be your big-time players on the team, outside, of course, your prospects. And Rocco Grimaldi has just been everything that the IceHogs could ask for after he was acquired from San Diego. He had 27 goals in 54 games with San Diego, and, you know, the goals were having a really bad year. So a blessing for him that he got a shot with Rockford, and he delivered.
David Gust gets his second goal of the playoff, 16:10 into the second, to put Rockford on top 2-1. Marco Rossi, though, with a power play goal early on in the third, a great forecheck for him. He just read this play perfectly, winds up coming up with a goal to tie the game. Then Adam Beckman scores his first goal of the playoffs at 5:53. It looked like that line had come together. Rossi gets an assist on that play. They had gotten Sammy Walker back. It looked like things were really going their way, but the IceHogs tie the game at 9:34, and then Buddy Robinson scores the game winner, 2:05 into the extra session, on kind of just a goal that I think, you know, Jesper Wallstedt, and I hate this phrase in general, but it's one of those, he's looking at it and goes, I think I should have saved that. But unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it, and the Iowa Wild season's over.
And once again, you know, a guy like Buddy Robinson, a minor league veteran, the guy's been through the wars of the AHL playoffs, and he came up big for the IceHogs on Friday night. I want to give a shout-out to the Des Moines fans for coming out over 6,000 strong on Friday night for a game. And for a playoff game where you can't get a lot of group sales, you pretty much have to rely on word of mouth and single-game ticket sales, that 6,090 was the crowd. That is an excellent turnout, and it was good to see them supporting their team. Unfortunately, it was in a losing effort, though.
As a result, Minnesota Wild deciding to not retain head coach Tim Army and his staff as the coach down there for the Iowa Wild. I know, talking with you last week, you were sounding like you were thinking he was going to be back this season. He's done such a good job of developing players. I know this had to be a surprise for you.
I thought it was, and then I talked to some others that maybe have their own thoughts on it too, and I guess a good point was made that you have to wonder, a guy like a Marco Rossi has now spent two full years in Iowa and has not shown that he is ready on the NHL level yet. So you wonder if they're a little disappointed in his development, and Adam Beckman hasn't become a full-time regular yet. But within that, keep in mind, guys like Brandon Duhame and Mason Shaw were also Tim Army players, and they have come up and have embraced the roles that they have been in. But keep in mind, Duhame and Shaw are more of your lunch pail, third, fourth liner, grinder guys, where, you want to see a guy like Rossi become a first, second line guy, and obviously a guy that was picked as high as he was in the draft. You need to have him developing, and you wonder if maybe that would be part of the reason that Army wasn't retained. And, we always say when a new GM comes in, they generally want their guys coaching, and Garen did give Army 2 years or so to show of prove himself to Garen, and I'm sure Garen's not totally dissatisfied with them, but I guess given the fact that they missed the playoffs last year and weren't in it very long this year, that I didn't think Garen maybe wants to give someone else a look down there. There'll be a pretty decent pool of prospects coming in the next couple of years, so I suppose Garen wants somebody else down there working with them. I guarantee you Tim Army's going to land somewhere. I think he's a very good hockey coach. Yeah. From what it seems like, he's just a very good person, too.
A phenomenal guy. Like him a lot. And you're right. He's a great coach. He's going to wind up in some spot. He was with that Colorado Avalanche staff when Patrick Waugh was the head coach there. And talking with his name's escaped, Alex Tanguay, who was an assistant with Tim Army in his second season with the Iowa Wild. He was telling me that Patrick Waugh said point blankly that Tim Army was the reason why their special teams were so good in Colorado, because he was such a good tactician with that kind of stuff. And so he'll find a job somewhere. There's no doubt about that. Do you kind of looking at this, Kevin, is there anybody that you think might, get that job in Iowa? Or that they seem to give the impression that there's no hurry to go sign somebody, but is there anybody whose name that might pop into your mind right now?
Nobody that I can think of within the Minnesota staff right now. I don't see any of the Minnesota assistants as guys that may drop down there and become a head coach. I don't, obviously the Heartlanders haven't groomed many coaching candidates, so I got a feeling it's going to be somebody that has had some kind of connection with Bill Guerin from his time with Pittsburgh. So who that may be, I don't know, but I have a feeling it's going to be somebody that he has a familiarity factor with and that he trusts to help develop his young guys that will be playing in Iowa to become regulars with the Minnesota. And that's going to be imperative, the next couple of years too, with Minnesota being in the salary cap grind that they're going to be in, to get as many guys ready as quick as you can in Iowa to play in Minnesota on entry level contracts and try to keep the team under the cap.
An interesting thing that's happening at the ECHL level, Kevin, is that there's been a lot of young head coaches that are getting a first shot, like Tim Costello retired and became the Allen Americans head coach this last year as an example. And they did that, I believe, in Atlanta. There was another coach out in the Northeast that got a job just like that, too. And that seems like to be a trend to look for these younger coaches that relate to players. I don't see that really happening on the AHL level, though. So you don't see – it would be unlikely that they would choose some guy that's maybe recently retired or a person in their late 30s or something to get a job like that, you would think.
Yeah, I don't see it like a coach in retread. I don't think you're going to go to the wheel of coaches and pick up a guy that's been through the ranks before. I have a feeling it's going to be somebody newer. Maybe it's a coach that is making waves in the junior ranks or working with young players and developing them. So, I mean, you just never know where they're going to come from. You know, I was gone down that route before. I want to say one of their first or second coach was like out of the college ranks, and it just never worked out. I forget the guy's name, but it didn't go good. But, you know, I thought the coaching was good in Iowa with John Torchetti, and then Torchetti had his brief time up with Minnesota, and that's when Army took over in Iowa and had a pretty nice run with the Wild.
Before we jump out of and move up to the NHL level, Kevin, a story that you and I didn't talk about last week, but I thought was interesting that we should mention here, was that the relationship between the Carolina Hurricanes and Chicago Wolves coming to an end. Chicago deciding not to have an affiliate NHL team at all. That seems kind of strange to me.
It's strange, but it's not unprecedented, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that all works out because, you know, back in my day, I sound like the old man in the yard right now, but in Minnesota, we had a team, Minnesota Moose. They were unaffiliated, and so were a lot of teams in that league. They picked up these guys that were veteran minor leaguers that put up good numbers and got some young guys to mix in with it. So, and that's going to be the formula the Wolves are going to go with. They're going to try to find some guys that, you know, that'll get released by the organizations during the summer. They're going to be hungry to go in and prove something. And, you know, as we follow with independent baseball, sometimes it's good to be with an independent team because you don't have just your parent team looking at you. You have every team looking at you. And I think it's going to allow for some players in the ECHL, too, that are also being overlooked. They can go on Chicago, and they can fill in the role of the rookie pros, and they, too, can get a good look. So it's going to be an adjustment. Chicago's going to have to really do their due diligence in picking their players, but it's going to be very interesting to see how that turns out.
Well, let's jump up to the big club now, Kevin. 2-2, tied with Dallas, have won the first and third games of the series and never trailed. You were at games 3 and 4 this past weekend. So just before we dive into the games themselves, your overall thoughts on how well the team has performed through the first 4 games?
I thought game 3 was about as good as they could play. The intensity was there from the drop of the puck, and they pressured Dallas all night. They only allowed one power play goal. I thought that was key. They didn't give up much 5-on-5. I think 5-on-5 for the whole series, they've been just as good as Dallas, if not even a little bit better. But I thought there was a little bit of a drop-off yesterday. I thought in the 3-2 loss, Minnesota just, they're missing on passes, and it just looked a little slow, maybe even a little bit tired. And it's got me wondering, you know, how healthy is Kirill Kaprizov right now? And how healthy is Matt Hartman? And what's he playing through? So, and Dallas took advantage of a couple of very questionable penalties to Minnesota. You know, that's got all the fans up here enraged. But, you know, the two penalties led to goals, but, you know, it's okay to kill a penalty. And Minnesota has not been doing it in the series. I believe Dallas is, what, 7 for 16 on the power play. So it's especially teams that's preventing Minnesota from potentially having a 3-1 lead in the series. So 2-2, I guess it's to me, I don't see Minnesota winning it. I don't see them winning a game in Dallas. They might come back here and win a game 6 in Minnesota. But, you know, stranger things have happened, and we'll see. Minnesota might embrace that underdog role and go to Dallas and maybe make something good happen.
So as you and I were talking last Monday night, Kirill Kaprizov scores a power play goal with 48 seconds left in the first period to give Minnesota the lead. Dallas battles back with 2 power play goals in the second period, but Sam Steele ties the game with a little over 5 minutes left in the second. No goals in the third. Both teams have opportunities in overtime with nobody coming away with a goal. Then Ryan Hartman delivers the game winner, 12-20 into the extra session. You know, they say that for the underdog in a series, that game one is the easiest one to win on the road. And I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily true all the time, but you know, if there's a game you want to steal, it was that one. And you got to really like how the Wild came out and took that game, especially in double overtime like that.
Philip Gustafson just was incredible. I know the 2 power play goals he gave up in the first, he would love to have had those back. But as he said himself after the game, he just reset himself after the second period, and he was lights out the rest of the way. You mentioned the Kirill Kaprizov goal. That's the only goal he's had in the whole series. They have shut him down other than that goal in the first period of game one.
Game two was a completely different story. Dallas winds up scoring 7 goals in this contest to come away with a 7-3 victory. They dominated this contest. Fairly close battle through the first period, but the second period, after Minnesota is able to come back and tie this game with their second power play goal of the series, it's all Dallas from that point. You mentioned the biggest factor of this game, Kevin. 3 power play goals for Dallas in that game, 3 for 6 on the power play. They add a shorthanded goal. I'm surprised. I really thought Minnesota's special teams would be a little bit better here, but I guess Dallas found something.
I think they did. I think they found Joel Eriksson-Ek not playing. That's been a big difference with the penalty kill, and it just hasn't been the same with Joel Eriksson-Ek out of the lineup. And there was just a lot of mistakes in the defensive end for Minnesota, and Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't bailing them out. They left him for dead a lot, but he wasn't coming up with that impossible save at all. So just a bad combo led to a pretty bad loss for game two.
They return home, though, Kevin, come away with a big 5-1 victory. Matt Zuccarello, scores 16:45 into the first to give the team the lead. Then a guy you really liked in signing, Marcus Johansson, continues to roll for this team. He gets his second goal of the playoffs. Marcus Foligno scores. Zuccarello comes out with his second goal of the game later on, and Ryan Hartman adds his second goal of the playoffs. Gustafson was fantastic in net for the team. Stops 23 of 24 shots. Just, as you mentioned, a very well-rounded performance by the club.
Gustafson was not really tested, and that's just a testament to Minnesota, how well Minnesota played in their own end and shutting down a really potent Dallas team. It was a pretty encouraging sign to see Zuccarello chipping in with a couple goals, because he has been in quite a drought for at least a good month now. So that was a good sign. Johansson's goal was, that was very pretty, and I'd have to say he's probably been the best forward of the series thus far. Matt Boldy has been invisible too, which is now the second straight postseason where Boldy has not contributed at all after having a really good regular season. So, you know, the talk up here is they need Boldy and Kaprizov if they're going to have a chance to win the series. They're going to need those two to start finding the back of the net again.
On Sunday, though, Dallas jumps out to a 2-0 lead. John Klingberg is able to cut that deficit in half, but Minnesota was just constantly trying to get back into this game. They fall behind 3-1 before Frederick Gaudreau gets his second goal in the playoffs with a little over a minute left in the game, but they're not able to get the equalizer. One power play goal for Minnesota, two more for Dallas. As you mentioned, Kevin, 43.8% on the power play right now. Clearly the difference in the series has been that Dallas power play.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Very good, yes, I would say.
Unbelievable.
They went back to Gustafson. Were you surprised by that move, and do you see him for Game 5?
No, I wasn't, and I think if you ask him, he would have liked to have had maybe one, maybe two of those goals back, but he didn't cost them the game. It was, like I said, the team looked a little slow yesterday. They missed a lot of opportunities in the front, maybe passed up shots that they should have taken, and just wasn't meant to be. But I just think just seems like the team plays a better defensive game in front of Gustafson. So I got a feeling that's who they're going to go to for Game 5, and it would have to take a real bad game on his part for him to come out at this point, I think.
Two stats clearly jump out in this, Kevin, to me. The power play, obviously, is one of the biggest ones. But another one I think that sometimes is ignored by people is faceoff percentage winning here. In Dallas, 56.7% you're winning here right now. And, you know, you win those draws in the offensive zone during a power play or in the defensive zone when you're killing off penalties, you're helping your special teams out there a lot. And I think this has really helped Dallas to create some opportunities for themselves because they're winning those key faceoffs.
Well, keep in mind, both of the goals in Game 1 were right off the draw. Guy wins a faceoff cleanly, shot, back to the net. And that's another spot where losing Erickson Ek has cost Minnesota dearly, because Ek has been their best faceoff guy. Ek tried to give it a go in Game 3, skated one shift for 19 seconds, tried to make an edge, and re-injured himself. Minnesota's being very quiet on his status, but I have a feeling we're not going to see him the rest of the series. So it's, you know, and this has been a struggle for Minnesota for going on two-plus seasons now, is they don't really have good, strong face-off centers, and it's cost them in the series, as you pointed out.
Well, they travel to Dallas tomorrow, then have a couple of days off before returning back to Minnesota on Friday night. If there is a need for a Game 7, it will be Sunday in Dallas. I know you were thinking Dallas in 7 before the series began. Are we still sticking with that?
Well, I think I had Dallas in 5, so Minnesota is already exceeding my expectations. But I have a feeling it will be Dallas in 6. And I hope I'm wrong.
I'm still saying Minnesota in 6. So, you've seen Gustafson for tomorrow night in Dallas. Any other changes that you might see or expectations you have for the club?
I have a feeling, you know, when they were talking about this on the post game last night, you could see Oscar Sundquist slot in possibly for Sam Steele, who, after he had a very good Game 1, he was invisible on Game 4. And Sundquist is also a center, so could be a thing where you can see Sundquist playing in the middle of the third line with Nyquist and Foligno.
You were talking about Matt Boldy really has just not been a factor in this series at all. Do you see them making some changes in the lines to try to get his offense going?
I don't think so, because Boldy's success this year has been when he's been teamed up with Marcus Johansson, and I just think at this juncture of the season, I just don't think mixing lines up is going to be a good long-term plan, because you're asking guys to try to build chemistry on the fly, and it could end up being disastrous. At this point, you just kind of got to go with what you have, and you hope that the puck luck changes or they find a second gear or something works out.
Well, let's look at just overall at this point here, Kevin, through these series so far. 2-1 Colorado leading over Seattle. You have 2-1 Vegas leading over Winnipeg. Edmonton and Los Angeles tied at 2. I'm surprised those Kings are. I really thought that they were in for a serious beatdown by Edmonton, but they've held their own so far.
Well, they definitely have, and you know that's a tough lineup with Edmonton, especially if you're getting into a high scoring game. And last night was an example of that with the Kings jumping out to a 3-0 lead, and then Edmonton comes back, eventually ties the game, and then wins it in overtime. So it's gonna be a tough series the rest of the way.
Boston up 3-1 over Florida, Toronto up 2-1 over Tampa Bay, Carolina up 3-1 over the New York Islanders, and New Jersey and New York tied at 2 apiece. The exception of a few series are tied at 2. The expected favorite is leading in all these series. Do you see anybody pulling an upset still at this point?
Well, as we're doing this show on Monday night, I'm just seeing the highlights of Toronto with a furious comeback to beat Tampa Bay and go up 3-1 in their series. So, you know, I know Toronto's a higher seed, but I didn't see them jumping out to a 3-1 lead like they have. So, other than that, it's going to be I'm watching the highlights of the Devils and Rangers. That series is tied at 2. I think the first team to win a home game will probably win that series. So there's so much parity in this league that I just don't see any series win that's going to come off as a surprise unless somehow Florida can come back and knock off Boston.
Yeah, that would be a real stretch. If Florida pulled that off, that might be one of the greatest upsets in Stanley Cup history for them to come back on that one. Tampa Bay dominated that game 1, but you got to tip your cap to Toronto for not letting that be a factor to them and just coming back and getting the series. So looking like they're in prime position. I'm curious, though, Kevin, as you looked at Edmonton battling back to tie that series up last night, do you see the Oilers now rolling from this point, or does Los Angeles come and take the series in advance?
Well, I still think you got to question your goaltending with Edmonton. You know, Stuart Skinner got pulled last night after giving up the 3 early goals. Jack Campbell's played well, obviously, in relief, but, you know, do you go back to Skinner? Do you give it to Campbell now? I mean, Campbell has been not very consistent in his time with Edmonton, so I think there's questions on both sides of goaltending with LA. Do you go to Phoenix Copley, who's been a winning goaltender, if not a guy that's had a high save percentage? So, you know, both teams got questions, so it's going to be interesting to see how that series turns out.
Well, Kevin, take us out tonight with your final thought or a story that you'd like to share with us here tonight.
Well, I'm going to try to be optimistic here and circle back to one of my favorite years of hockey, 1991. It was the first round. Minnesota was playing against the President Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. And the teams split the first 4 games. And at the time, I was thinking, well, okay, well, it was a nice run, but I just don't see the North Stars winning in Chicago. So I go to the Twins home opener on that Friday night. Get back in my car, turn on the North Stars game, and North Stars are up 5-0 in Chicago Stadium. Just completely dominated the Blackhawks on their home ice, and then came back to Minnesota in front of a raucous crowd at Met Center and won the series in 6 games. So I'm hoping we're in for a repeat with that for the Minnesota Wild. I'd love to be wrong about my playoff prediction, but I'm just kind of hedging my bets where I'll either be happy or I'll be right, one of the two. But I can just remember, it's amazing what momentum will do, and that 5-0 win that the North Stars had in Chicago catapulted them to a run that went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals in 1991. So we'll see if the Wild have that in their system tomorrow night.
Fantastic. Kevin Lukow, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.